This is Radio Free Pro Wrestling, your home for smart and stunning wrestling debate with lifelong wrestling fans, Sean and Ashley. Let the debate begin.
Well, happy post-AEW Revolution. Is Monday night. I'm Sean, and I'm with the newly crowned, first time ever, Radio Free Professional Wrestling new pick contest champion, Ashley, as she defeated me 6-4 in our first ever pick contest between the two of us. So I'm keeping my tradition alive of me not being able to pick contests is worth a flip. But champ, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. We had a great show last night and kind of looking forward to getting into it.
You know, I feel like we came into this AEW pay-per-view thinking that it was going to be a good pay-per-view card. Coming out of it, I kind of agree with a lot of people thinking this may be pay-per-view of the year already for 2024, and we're just in the fourth day of March.
I think by the end of the year, it'll certainly be a top contender for a lot of people.
So the show opened up with the TNT title match. It's Christian Cage versus Daniel Garcia, and I kind of missed this match. I was heading to the house to watch the pay-per-view from work. I got upstairs, get to the TV, turn it on DirecTV, and I had no freaking sound for the first hour. So here I am trying to figure out what to do as I'm watching the action on the TV. And Ashley, this match, I picked Garcia to win this title because I thought Cage has done everything he could possibly do with it. You were correct. Christian Cage, with a little help from his son, Nick Wayne, carries the day.
I will say, I did pick Christian because I kind of hedged my bets on the interference. I will say, I think in terms of outcomes, though, this is the match I was kind of the most disappointed with, not in terms of like the quality, but like you said, I too think Christian Cage is kind of done for, at least now, what he can do with this title. And to put it on the up-and-coming Daniel Garcia with the showing and that he's had and the crowd support he's had would have been kind of the move, or at least like the preferred move for me.
My question to you, Ashley, is what do you do with Daniel Garcia after he had this defeat here? Yes, you have this caveat of all this interference. We could go down the road again and have another TNT title match with Christian Cage versus Daniel Garcia, but I feel like we just had the perfect opportunity to slide this title over to Daniel Garcia.
I hoped for it. I was hoping, I know we had Copeland go out with the concerto a few weeks ago, but I was kind of hoping maybe he would kind of run in and help, but kind of just Daniel Garcia getting a little bit of help from Daddy Magic until Killswitch got involved again. But I really wanted Daniel Garcia to win, and I hope that at least for now we're not done with it. Like, I'd like to see like Daniel Garcia take on Nick Wayne.
You know, that's one bright spot from this outcome is now we can swing him over into a feud with Nick Wayne because that would be a highly entertaining matchup. Now, talking about another highly entertaining matchup that's coming into this pay-per-view was Eddie Kingston versus the American Dragon, Brian Danielson. And you were correct. Eddie had one of the biggest smiles on his face when he was there just waiting for the American Dragon to have to shake his freaking hand.
And I love Brian's continued sort of being the biggest jerk on earth to Eddie Kingston, even after almost acting like at first he wasn't going to shake his hand, before ultimately grabbing him, shaking his hand and raising his hand. And they kind of like bowed to each other, and just two of my favorite wrestlers, one of my favorite all-time AEW rivalries, and just another great match between those two.
Yes. And I was happy this match had zero interference because this was a match where you could easily see the other members of BBC come down and interfere to cause Kingston the match. But this here, I feel like maybe we get this makeshift tag team of the American Dragon and Eddie Kingston into this AEW tag team title tournament that is coming down the road since, spoiler alert, Sting and Darby Allin won at AEW Revolution. They are still your AEW tag team champions and the titles have been vacated.
Sting going out as a champion, as he should.
Very, very true. But we'll get there. We're going on to our next match. Now, the third match on this card was Scramble match for the option to have a future AEW world title match. And in this match, we had Chris Jericho, Powerhouse Hobbs, which was my pick, Lance Archer, Wardlow, your pick. We had Brian Cage, Hook, Dan Martin, and Magnus. This was this was a match I could care less about. But after seeing this one, it was better than what I thought it could be. It was one of those matches where I had low expectation, But afterwards, it was a perfectly fine match on this card. And hey, you get Wardlow over here.
Sort of the same. I feel like the same here. Like I pretty much had some low expectations for it. And I will say there were a few botches and there were some clunky spots along the way. I think that comes sometimes with the territory of big multi-man matches like this, though, especially one that wasn't really on the card a few days ago. Especially when you have somebody like Magnus from a completely different company who most of the talent hasn't worked with at all. But I do think Wardlow was the right call. I picked him because I figured Meat Madness was kind of meant to be a showcase for him. And I figured they would keep it going with that. So I am curious to see where this goes now with Samoa Joe retaining if we get Wardlow versus Samoa Joe at the next pay-per-view.
Well, I feel like when we get to Big Business, we're going to have Samoa Joe versus Wardlow for the AEW World title. Maybe main eventing that show.
I could definitely see him, yeah, doing it on like one of those kinds of Dynamites or something. Yeah, definitely one of the more heavily promoted like special edition episodes.
Well, I want to give a shout to one of our viewers here, Randy Chapapier. You may know him as a voice from the Raw Dogs main event. He's saying Ashley for president, Sean for crayon coloring. And you know, Randy's a former co-host of this show. He's always giving me a hard time. So, Randy, thank you for being on the show with us. And your comments are always read and entertain me so much. Just as much as FTR versus the Blackpool Combat Club, which is our next match coming up. And Ashley, one spot from this match made me howl. And it's Claudio Castagnoli running up the ropes to deliver a European uppercut version of the Doomsday Device. Sit there and go like, how did he pull this sucker off?
That was probably the best spot of the match, in my opinion. I loved that, and I loved Cash Wheeler doing the dive and Claudio uppercutting him. Claudio had great timing with that. It looked fantastic. I feel like the match started off a little slower, but around the, like, I don't know, like 8-10 minute mark, it really picked up, and that match just got everybody so invested by that time, and everybody was into it, and I was kind of surprised to see BCC pick up the win.
Well, you know, it was one of the few bright spots on the card for me because I picked BCC to win the sucker. And like you, I feel like the match picked up once we saw some color from Dax. But man, he was bleeding a crimson mask there by the end of the show.
It was quite the hole.
Well, you know, up to that point, he was the person with the most blood until another match down the road here. So let's go on to the next match on the card. And if I remember right, it's the AEW Women's title match. It's Talentless Toni Storm versus Deonna Purrazzo. And we had a cameo from a younger Toni Storm, but it was right. And they had me for a second. I thought Toni Storm was going to come out in her own getup with her own theme, and we're going to get a little Bassman to pass.
AEW's theme of Revolution this year was to psych you out at the beginning of people's entrances and make you think somebody was somebody else, because this also happens later on in the show. But same, the only thing that like I was like, oh, Tony's like doing like a special thing for Revolution, and then the only thing that clued me in after like a minute was like the length of the hair.
Exactly. I think I caught on to when she lowered her glasses down and I saw the eyes, and I was like, oh, it's Mariah May. And I was like, oh, but she had everything nailed down perfectly.
Yeah, and she the resemblance is sort of just uncanny. And I genuinely, like, I'm so interested to see when Mariah May is going to kind of pull the trigger on what he's actually looking for, which is the women's title, because even at the end of this match, handing the belt over to Tony, she was taking an extra long look at it.
True. And I feel like we both kind of picked Toni Storm here because we felt like it was too early to end the Timeless gimmick because it's so well received by the fans of AEW. And Deonna Purrazzo can work her way back around to the AEW world title, or hey, we can spin her off into the feud for the TBS title with Julia Hart maybe. And we also have Mercedes Moné coming in here eventually in about 10 days in Boston probably.
Yeah. And I like Deonna just came in and I feel like sometimes wrestling fans ultimately just see like somebody come in like that and think that they need to be the champion or a champion as soon as they come in. And this is not always the case. It doesn't always need to be that way. There is plenty of time for Deonna Purrazzo to get back to the to being a challenger and then eventually a champion.
Very true. We'll go on to our next match. Remember correctly, this was probably the match that everybody was going to say steals the show. It's Katesha versus Will Ospreay in Greensboro, North Carolina. They did the Ospreay entrance so freaking well. They made him into a megastar. If he wasn't already a megastar to the hardcore fans, the fans who didn't know of the New Japan Pro Wrestling versus Will Ospreay, they are going to see this guy as the star because that crowd sounds so freaking loud going, Ospreay, Ospreay.
Yeah. And what a match. I mean, genuinely, if this hadn't been on a card with Sting's last match, I think this would be the match that every, like, there's a lot of people talking about it coming out of the pay-per-view, but I feel like it would be the match that everybody was talking about if it wasn't for the main event and all the stuff with that. But what are we going to do? Every single match he's going to have to have the, is this the match of the year contender? Like,
well, trust me, I was having this debate about 11 o'clock last night. Cause if you remember last week's episode, I was raving about Michael Oku versus Will Ospreay being my match of the year. I threw the gauntlet down. There's not a match that's going to outdo this. 1 week later, Katesha versus Will Ospreay. And this is the spot of that brain buzzer where it kind of slightly went wrong and Ospreay landed on the lower of his back. I thought, oh no, he's going to be injured. This match is going to have to be cut short. Luckily, he made it through that and carried on to have one of the best matches of the night, if not the year.
I pretty much tweeted, Don Callis has booked one match and I vote him for Booker of the Year 2024 at the outcome of that match. I can't even put into words how awesome that was. It was brutal. It was that spot where Ospreay has to catch up, I think, for the Stormbreaker. He flips out of it, hits him with the crunchy, does his big giant German like the rolling suplex. Oh my god. And then Will Ospreay pops up and hits him with the hidden blade, and then they both just collapse. Holy shit, man. Like, that was awesome. And the crowd just lost it when Ospreay hit it. And I mean, this is night one on the job.
So true. And I gotta say, that was probably my favorite match. And we had two matches left on this card. The next match up is the AEW World Title match. It's the three-way match between Samoa Joe, Swerve Strickland, and the most deranged Heyman Adam Page you have seen in a long time. And you know what? He's true to his word. Swerve Strickland is not champion.
It's very true. And the one thing the only thing that bothers me about the ending is they got the shot of Heyman on the outside after the match, and kind of just as he's starting to smirk, they cut away, and I was hoping they would kind of at least give more of a hint like that he was doing it, because it was so brief that I don't know if most people caught it, but it looked like he was kind of starting to smirk. And it feels like even like attacking the officials was, you know, like a very pointed and very choice thing for him to do. I know there's some people I've seen not love this. I love this. I love Hangman. He wanted the title. He started off going, I want to go after the championship again, until Swerve got in his way and slowly ate at him more and more and more until he thought he still wanted the title, but what he really wanted to do was just hurt Swerve and stop Swerve. And now he's so obsessed with the idea, even though he can't beat him yet, that he is willing to do literally anything, even at his own, you know, at his own expense, to prevent Swerve from winning. And I love it, because this means we're getting more Swerve and Hangman at some point.
Very true. This story of this match is basically Strickland and Paige want to beat each other for the AEW World title. They could care less if Samoa Joe's in this match. They tried to keep him out of this match. And then you get Samoa Joe locking the submission onto Hangman Adam Page, and Hangman Adam Page goes like, you know what? It's not bad if I lose here, because Swerve Strickland doesn't get the title. So tap, tap, tap. And like you, I wish they would have kept their cameras on Heyman and let him have that evil laugh, because he basically became a heel during this match. He attacked two referees. What babyface get away with that? Not many babyfaces would get away with that. And we saw the face turn of Strickland, where you have his manager right there handing him the headdress, going like, now's the time, use this, hit the guy with it. Let's get the title. Let's go home. And Strickland's going like, no, I ain't going to do that.
Right. Hangman uses the title himself to try to take Swerve out of the match. I'm very here for Unhinged Hangman. I did read a report that he might be out for a little bit coming up, so I'm not exactly sure where that's going to leave us for now, though, if it's true.
Yeah, I heard the same reports that he's taking some time off away from AEW, so it might be a while before we see Hangman and Page pop back up on TV. Who knows? He could partner up with his buddies, the Young Bucks, and be a heel faction again, which would be kind of fun and entertaining to see.
I was kind of thinking something along the lines of that, because even if I would love to see like Hangman like as a heel with the Young Bucks as heels like this, because it's been a long time, I feel, since Hangman has been a heel. So kind of seeing this side of him, this new side, like kind of like psychotic on him side, I'm here for it.
Well, we'll see what comes from Hangman and Page as we go on into the spring in AEW. But we're at it. We're at the main event, and it's Sting and Darby Allin versus the Young Bucks for the AEW World Titles. It's a tornado tag match, so there's no rules. And to say they use everything about a kitchen sink is true. Only thing they didn't use was a kitchen sink. If they got back to the bathroom, they probably would have done it.
It was so awesome.
I mean, everything from his son's coming out dressed like the Younger versus the Sting. For a minute there, I thought, oh, Sting's going to go back to Surfer Sting for one final match with Darby. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. No, here comes out NWO Wolfpack Sting. I'm like, okay, they got two body doubles. And I realized, no, they're his sons. I'm like, oh, this is so freaking cool. And they incorporate the sons into the match.
For a second, too, when his oldest son came out as Surfer Sting, I thought the same exact thing. I was like, oh, he changed up for one night for his last match or whatever. He went back to old school Sting. And then I was like, no, that's not him. along with the Mariah May intro of the night, kind of doing the same thing to me. Both of his sons looked scarily like him, dressed up in both attires. And I feel like this match was, I feel like the reaction to it from what I saw was a little more divided than what I felt it should have been. This match was awesome. It was so fun. This is how Sting wanted to do it, to go out for his final match. He wanted to work with two guys that, one, he loves, he's friends with, two, he knows is safe, he knows their history and their work ethic. He wanted to work alongside, people wanted him and Darby, I feel like, to kind of have their final match against each, or his final match against each other. But I love that they never broke up. I love that they never broke apart. Like, Sting was there for Darby till the end, and Darby was there for Sting till the end. I love it. They were like ride or die for each other. And to go out on top in one of the most entertaining, not just AEW matches, but probably matches we're going to see this year, unreal, emotional. Like, I never watch a match to be unbiased or objective or to give it star ratings. I watch this match as a fan, and this match was fun as hell, amazing, and everything from the video package at the beginning to the poorly productioned timing of the cutoff of the end of Sting's speech, perfect.
You know, it's kind of apropos here because they're coding down to the last couple of minutes on the window for this pay-per-view, and Darby has to go over to Sting, go like, hey, we're hitting the heart out here. And Sting literally goes like, hang on, guys, I'm getting a cue. So, but honestly, you know, a lot of people had a lot of criticism about Young Bucks being unwilling to put people over or just out for themselves. This match right here proves they're willing to do a job to send off a legend and Sting the right way, because they could have went, hey, we want the titles. Let's put the titles on us, please. No. They spent 21 minutes, just 21 minutes, getting the every-loving bloody hell beat out of them. And Greensboro was eating it up. I was surprised Greensboro didn't have a few people try and hit the Young Bucks on the way out. But, you know, because it's Sting country.
Especially after the beginning of the match when they were chanting F the Young Bucks.
Okay, let's talk about two special spots here. Ric Flair comes down at the beginning of the match, and also special guest timekeeper Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, and this is the start of his WCW music hits. You get a chill down your back, and here's the Young Bucks. How can we be even more heel in North Carolina? Well, attack Ric Flair with a double super kick, then we'll go after Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. I mean, like, I felt like they needed extra security on the way out of the building.
Yeah. Kind of weird to see Flair come in to the very end. Kind of stay true to his word with Sting for once, and he didn't turn on him. He tried to help him at the end. And then just to see Ricky the Dragon Steamboat back was awesome, because we haven't seen him since the Dragon, when Brian Danielson and Ricky Starks fought. So it's been a while. It still looks fantastic. And I love the spot, him taking the super kick. I thought it looked great. He took a bump like a champ.
You know, you needed to have one spot for Flair, and that was a good spot to have Flair and take him out of the match. So we got that checked off on the match list. And it's just a feel-good moment to see the Young Buck eat the Scorpion Death Drop, flip it around to the Scorpion Block, tap, 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 as we send Sting off as champion. Bravo.
Yep, gets the final moments in the ring with his sons, kind of gets to address everybody for a period of time before the cutoff, and then the rest of it was posted on social media and YouTube and stuff. But what a ending. Like, it's so crazy that we even got this time with him, because like reading some of the stuff like that I was like just reading through about like all their time, like Darby Allin kind of like convinced Sting after the cinematic match to do matches live and stuff like that. So it feels like we all have like a debt of gratitude, at least two, for Darby Allin for convincing Sting to go on this run one last time.
Very true. And the fact that back in 2015, I really thought after the match with Seth Rollins and he suffers that injury, we may never see him back in the ring. And we got 3 more years with Sting, and it was 3 of the best years of his career.
And what a way to go out. 30-0 with the 1-0 match and the 29-0 AEW record, and as a tag team champion with his tag team partner, and one of the only like tag teams you see like of two people who like were kind of like singles people who came together and stayed together the entire time and kind of solidified themselves as like a tag team as well. I love it. I love it for Sting, who deserves every single bit of love and gratitude and all the stuff that he's getting right now. It was fantastic. And what he's done for that roster and showing them what you can do in storytelling, in conveying your emotions in the ring and everything, it will never be like overstated. Like, I can't even even begin to describe like what he's done for Darby Allin.
I know. Well, we're going to address this in the 76 questions. So let's go ahead and switch over and allow me a second.
Time to ring the bell as Sean and Ashley debate 6 stunning questions from the week of wrestling. All the whys and what the hell was that?
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's go over to the stunning 6 questions, as my first stunning question to you guys is going to be, should AEW put all their pay-per-views on Saturday night and forgo Collision that week, or move it to Sunday and pair it up with Collision in the same city? As you were watching AEW Collision this week, it felt kind of flat. It didn't feel like really a go-home show, Ashley. Am I crazy, or do I have a good idea here?
No, I kind of felt that too this week. It's very weird that for a show that they had recorded in advance, it felt like the full card didn't get announced until Saturday.
Very true. And really, there wasn't that much on AEW Collision that played any factor into the show 24 hours later.
Yeah, kind of a strange choice. I felt like both shows were a little weird this week, leading up with Dynamite and stuff as well. Not like terrible, but definitely had some, like you said, like kind of stuff that didn't seem to correlate into, or like indicate anyway, that we were heading towards this pay-per-view this weekend.
And to me, it felt like they recorded Collision before they did AEW Dynamite on Wednesday night, because I felt like the crowd for Collision at moments was louder than the crowd at Dynamite. Now, granted, I could be personally wrong.
No, I don't think so. I think it's always tough, too, when they do, especially like a recording for those shows on a weekday. Like, when I went to the last show, even Blood and Guts, like I still had to travel a bit. So I had to travel like 2 hours out of the way. You're there for a Ring of Honor show and the 2-hour show. So if you're there for Collision and Dynamite, you're there for 2 2-hour shows along with your travel and stuff, I imagine like it's going to be a lot tiring for people on a weeknight.
And honestly, I got this idea of thinking WWE is heading over to France in May to do a pay-per-view, and they're doing a live SmackDown from the same city the night before the pay-per-view. And I'm going like, that makes perfect sense. And I feel like Greensboro, you could have had a live collision on from Greensboro and then have the pay-per-view the night after. Maybe they couldn't get in the arena for two nights in a row. That might have been an issue. But in the future, this is what I would do.
I think they do need to work on it in some sort of capacity, especially with them expanding the schedule. You can't do like a 6-hour Sunday night pay-per-view every month. Like, people have to work in the morning and they already start at like 7 o'clock. They go till about midnight. Like, if you're going to do these monthly pay-per-views, you need to start parsing down, I think, a little bit to maybe 3 hours, maybe 4 hours. I felt like this one was okay, but I feel like this one was just, it was so good. It flew by, but it was still sort of long. But if you're going to continuously do them on Sunday nights, you have to kind of take into consideration you're keeping people up very late on a night where most people have to get up and work the next morning.
Well, you know, I think Tony Khan addressed this in the media scrum where he's like, he's doing it on a per paid basis, and he wants to stay away from the NFL in the fall, was perfectly smart. The NFL is the number one giant media out there, and it's going to take a big chunk out of your business. So it's kind of a lose-lose situation because college football is the same way during the fall. So
football is always going to eat into your ratings, like no matter what. It's just so big in this country. It's always going to take out a chunk of your stuff. So I don't know where they go from here with that. I would love them to do the Saturday pay-per-views, honestly. I would honestly even love if they could work it into doing it earlier. Like, I loved the All-In. Like, let's keep all the pay-per-views at the All-In time.
Well, you know, you were talking about expanding the pay-per-view numbers. So let's go to study question number two. As Tony Khan's saying, the ideal number is 9 as we're adding another pay-per-view in April on the 21st. It's a Sunday. Here's another $50 you need to give AEW. Ashley, can we make it stop?
I hope. I feel like we're getting a little bombarded here with kind of like the additions of these pay-per-views. We just added World's End. We added All In. We added, and now we're adding Dynasty. And I'm hoping that they can work it in and it can be, you know, comparable to the other ones. But I feel like we're getting a little diluted down with how many pay-per-views we're getting. Especially because it feels like almost like, especially from like, we'll say like All In, All Out time, you have like All In and All Out within a week of each other. Then there's Wrestle Dream, Full Gear, World's End, and then you get a little bit of a break, and then Revolution. It just feels like there's so many kind of like at one time. Like they're not at all, like they're weirdly spaced, I would say. So I feel like we might have to work on the schedule a bit.
I agree. It's kind of a weird cluster where you have a few months where you have pay-per-view after pay-per-view after pay-per-view. Then there's a long little gap. The fact that he wants to do 9 at $50 a piece, that's $450 right there off the bat. That's a lot of money for a lot of people.
Especially All In and All Out. That's two pay-per-views that he has said that he intends to keep doing a week apart from each other. That's $100 in a week he expects from people every single time. And then, like I said, it's just like kind of like a bombardment of pay-per-views right after that. And it's also just like the end of the year around that time. Like that's holiday time for a lot of people. That's, you know, trying to save some money at least. So I feel like if they continue to push it, they might start hurting the buyout rates just for, you know, just for how many there are. People are going to have to kind of pick and choose maybe a little more which ones they're going to buy, as opposed to kind of just buying the big four and being content.
True. I can see people start selecting based on the card they get. Yet another reason AEW needs to get these cards out faster so they can bring in people to afford these buy rates. I feel like 6 is the perfect number. You have 6, you have every other month. And if you don't want to do every number of month, you can keep All In, All Out inside the same fortnight. That's fine. That's cool. But give us an option to buy both together for $75. I would take that offer.
Yeah, I would do, I honestly, I would do like seven. I would do like one every month, and then you could do like keep like Forbidden Door, like one of the big special ones or something, is kind of like, okay, like maybe, you know, within this 2 months, I'm okay with spending it like in the summer or something like that. I just feel like we're kind of adding a bunch on, and I'm hoping that we can start, like you said, we got to start building the cards to them a little better so that people know what they're getting before the show is set to air. Because if we kind of keep doing things the way AEW does, where they, like I said, even with Collision this past week, it was so weird to see it was pre-recorded and know it was recorded. And like, I tend to avoid spoilers anyway, but like to not even see the full card really announced on AEW's like Twitter page or social media pages until like the Saturday it happened was very weird.
Agree. So we'll move on to our third stunning question of the week. And this may be a hard question for all of us, but what is Sting's impact during his time with AEW? Because he entered AEW during the pandemic era where there was no fans in the building. And his first match was that cinematic match, which was a very well done cinematic match.
I think it's just going to be immeasurable. You've already seen like how many other wrestlers have spoken so highly of him, and all he's been able to kind of like pass on in his wisdom and his knowledge and everything he's done over in this business over the years. It is genuinely, especially now with social media and a lot of past coming back to bite, a lot of legends that we've loved in the past kind of in the back end, to see Sting, this guy who still after 40 years has nobody saying anything bad about him, universally beloved. You know, like you said, we thought we were going to lose any chance of ever seeing him in the ring again with the injury he sustained a few years ago. What a way to go out. Just perfect. I know he didn't really want to go out as champion. I know he didn't really want to go out as undefeated and in a top guy, but he is a top guy, and that's how he deserves to go out.
You know, my feeling is he was like one of the first big outside acquisitions they got. I mean, like, they had Chris Jericho from day one. True. They had Kenny Omega from day one. But adding Sting, he's a totally different level. It brings in the history of WCW and the fact they're on TV, TNT and TBS, and the fact that that's where Nitro was back in the day. It brought in a lot of older fans who kind of got away from the WWE because the WWE wasn't their brand or wrestling. And I could see that. And I feel like having Sting kind of legitimize this startup company, which we have to remember, during year four, at the time when Sting entered this company, it was like year one and a half, and we didn't know if they would make through the first TV contract. And here we are 40 years later during negotiating with Discovery Time Warner, and all sides look like they're going to have a good deal. So I feel like Sting did a lot of good for this company.
Oh, yeah. In every capacity, what he has done for this company is immeasurable. From, like I said, like the wisdom and stuff that he's parting on to the newer wrestlers, from the work he did with just Darby Allin alone, who I think has kind of like improved in like kind of his, people will say it's not psychology, but there is psychology to what he does, to his psychology, to his promos especially, to all the help he gives. With, I'm sure he's helping with like production and like, you know, like helping with Tony Khan's ideas and things like that. This guy is just a wealth of knowledge. He's unbelievably talented. He's humble to a goddamn fault. And like you said, like his belief to kind of come in so early in AEW is something that helped like really legitimize them at the beginning. And I think like even his debut was so well done. Like it was like such a great surprise. Like it was something that kind of didn't make it to the dirt sheets before it happened. So it was just an all around great moment. And to just see the work he's put in, it's the definition of like the perfectly timed picking and choosing your spots. Just phenomenal.
Well, let's go on to the next standing. It's going to be as hard as the last one, because can you please tell me your Sting match? Or would you like me to go first?
Go ahead. I don't know how you pick one.
Well, I did pick one. True to my fashion, I got two. And I'm going with the first one. It's 1988. is the one to put Sting on the map. It's Ric Flair versus Sting for the NWA World title in that same building in Greensboro, North Carolina, 45 minutes. It's a draw. It goes to the judges, and Flair wins by one judge. Now, fast forward to 1990, the Great American Bash. Sting finally gets that title off of Flair, and it's a little later than what they originally had planned, because Sting, back in 89, climbed the steel cage to go after Flair, blew his knee out, so they had to wait to Sting get recovered. So the title went from Flair to Luger for a while, back to Flair. Then we had this match at the Great American Bash, and finally, Sting, Ric Flair, and races with Surfer Sting. And honestly, to me, Surfer Sting is my favorite Sting.
I mean, they're two of like the most like beloved matches of Sting's entire catalog. Excuse me. It's hard to argue with the first Flair match, honestly. Like, it's maybe objectively his best match. Trying to choose one. I don't know. I'm throwing like a dart at the wall here. I guess I could either go with that one. I'm a huge fan of the Nitro match with DDP.
Oh, that was so good too. That was a great match.
Yeah, that was kind of one that like everything hit for me. Like I loved everything, the crowd, the commentary. Oh my God, one match.
Well, I had another match on the list. Another match you could go to is 2008. It's TNA Sting at Bound for Glory. Going to this Bound for Glory, the history was every time at Bound for Glory, Sting wrestled for the TNA World Championship. He won it. This time, AJ Styles is the champion. Babyface AJ Styles. Can he defeat the Icon Sting? Can he defeat this little mini streak that Sting had? He did. And this launches AJ Styles into another level in TNA.
That's true. That's a very good one. And man, it's crazy to think of all the top guys that Sting has faced over his time.
And I haven't mentioned Muda. There's a lot of good Muda matches.
That's true, too. Oh, my. Like, this is the problem. You think of one, and then you're like, oh, yeah, this one. Oh, yeah, this one. Oh, yeah, this one. Oh, my God. Just unbelievable. And, like, just everywhere he went, just, like, amazing matches, top-notch stuff.
True. So, we'll table that. We may do our own special Best of Sting category Ring of Free Professional Wrestling show here in a couple of weeks, and we'll try to narrow down our top 10 matches, maybe. So let's go into our next standing question. As we go over to SmackDown from last Friday night, it opened up with a 30-minute promo, and it's the Bloodline and The Rock, and I gotta say, it must be the only group that could do this and make it entertaining, because we learned a lot of stuff in this 30 minutes. One, Rock is not going to face Cody Rhodes 1-on-1. No. Rock said, no, not that. He counter-offered and said, hey, how about me and Roman? Me and Roman versus you and your clown, Seth Rollins. And if you win on night two, Bloodline won't be in your world title match with Roman. But if you lose, I'm going to sit right down there and I may just take this chair and shove up you-know-what. And it's going to be Bloodline rules. So, Ashley, is this segment too long? Did it really interfere with SmackDown that night? What are your thoughts about this?
I guess there can be a place for these segments. I personally think they're too long. You have 2 hours on a show, and especially that all indications were that this went over the time it was allotted and cut into another match. I don't think that's fair to anybody else on the card. There are a lot of people who work to get their spot and to actually go out there and wrestle. And like, that's the kind of stuff that's kind of like what I'm more watching for. I'm more watching for the in-ring stuff. So if I was at a show where they were kind of just talking, I wouldn't be as into it. I know that they're pushing it with this, for this match coming up. So like I said, there's a place for it. I do wish they had maybe cut it down just a little bit. Maybe, you know, allot them 15 minutes. That way, if they do go over a little bit, you're still okay.
Okay, so if I told you that on the same episode of SmackDown, you had Dakota Kai turn on Bayley, you had Braun Breaker's debut on SmackDown, you had Tiffany Stratton versus Naomi for the first time ever, outside of that Elimination Chamber match, this was a 1-on-1 match, and your main event was Randy Orton versus Austin Theory. Would you remember anything else besides The Rock in that verbal segment?
honestly, looking through social media, you wouldn't really think anything else happened.
And like, you had this turn where you're bringing Bayley back to being a babyface. You have Dakota Kai joining up with the rest of Damage Control. And it's an afterthought because the first 30 minutes is like The Rock and Roman. And that's what all the social media is talking about. That's all what we're talking about.
I mean, you could even do like you don't have to have them actually come out and in the ring, stand there and cut a promo. You could do those things in the back where like Rock and Roman are talking and you kind of keep going back to it throughout the night and in between matches and segments and things like that. And you could still kind of get a lot across the point of what, you know, what The Rock is saying. And you don't have to, you can at least have a better judge of like, okay, we have 5 minutes here. Okay, we have 10 minutes here. Okay, we have, you know, it kind of helps you figure out the pacing a little better. I can say that, but it's a big hit and everybody is very excited for this match. So I feel like I'm in the minority on this one.
Well, we'll table this and we'll go on to our final stunning question of the week. And the final stunning question of the week is coming up here in a second. And I want to say, what is The Rock's impact on his return to WWE and professional wrestling? If he's took to Rock's social media and his X account, he had a Liffy promo there where he's talking about he's made professional wrestling cool. After decades, professional wrestling is cool again because The Rock is back.
I feel like I'll know a little bit more about like how the impact is like after WrestleMania, but I feel like, I mean, he's obviously brought back in a lot of fans who maybe weren't watching or at least as involved before because a lot of people have like the nostalgic attachment to The Rock. This storyline is obviously a mega hit. Like, this is the biggest story going into the biggest show of the year for them. This is like their bread and butter right now. And I think a lot of people were at the point where they were kind of fed up with Roman. At least that's what I was seeing on social media, like kind of like the rinse and repeat, kind of like Bloodline interference, Roman wins match. And then we kind of got this like injection with The Rock coming in and it sort of changed the dynamic of it and is now again made it more interesting and people are again invested in a different way. That alone I think is huge because you're kind of riding Roman right now with this title reign, and then it starts getting these like almost like kind of like shoot negative like feedbacks and comments. So to kind of inject The Rock in, get this new perspective, have everybody be invested in it again. This Roman Reigns is still one of your top guys. You know, he's still a top merch guy. He's still a top draw. He's still a top everything. So it's fantastic for him. It's fantastic for The Rock and it's fantastic for WWE, who has been doing a great job with this long-term story.
You know, I feel like this addition of The Rock into the Bloodline story came at the right time because it, like you said, it was feeling to get little as the rinse and repeat cycle of his matches. Now we have Rock involved. And in that promo segment, you see Roman putting his hand on Rock's arm as he's trying to bring the mic up. And he's like, Rock, I need you to do me one favor. I need you to acknowledge me. And the look of Paul Heyman's face, like, oh, no, not this, not this. This is going to break everything up. And you had that moment where you're thinking, like, here's the tension. Here's the seed. We're going to see the split. And The Rock goes like, I'll do anything for family. So Roman, I acknowledge you.
And like I said, like it kind of gives you this whole new dynamic. And the Rock is kind of like a dude that is going to bridge a gap for older viewers and younger viewers, bringing in people, like I said, who maybe haven't been watching or even as closely watching in the past couple of years because he is such a big draw and recognizable person. So I can't say it's not like a home run idea. I feel like I said, like, we'll know a little bit more about the long-term impact of what this is after WrestleMania.
Well, we'll table this and we'll see how things go along as we're heading road to WrestleMania. This has been your Stunning Six Questions here on Radio Free Professional Wrestling for March the 4th, 2024. And let's go over to our control center to catch you up in the week of professional wrestling news.
This is your Radio Free Pro Wrestling Control Center. All the wrestling news you need to know.
And sadly, actually, my first story is the passing of Ole Anderson, who passed away last week at age 81. He was a founding member of the Four Horsemen. And behind the scenes, a very controversial figure. I gotta say, my first memory of Sting is 1989, Corpus Christi, Texas, Clash of the Champions. Sting is the member of the Four Horsemen. They bring him down to the ring. Terry Funk is the MC, and Ole Anderson lays out the charges, going like, you did the ultimate sin. You accepted a match against Ric Flair for the world title. We're kicking you out of the Four Horsemen, and you have to end a night to say, no, you don't need this title to the WCW Championship Committee. So we want to send our condolences to the family and friends of Ole Anderson.
Yeah, also, Paul the Butcher Vachon died as well this past week.
I know, that was also, like, this out of left field, and I'm, like, going through this news stories, I saw that, and he is the adopted father to Linda Vachon, and that whole family right there is legendary. And we'll move on to the next story, as in the same week, we had the passing of Mike Jones, who is better known to us as Virgil, the manager / valet to the Million Dollar Man. He passed away at age 61. And I can remember him facing the Million Dollar Man for the Million Dollar title back in 1990. And that babyface run he had, there was something there for Virgil. And I was like,
did you see the story about they had his date? He had worked everybody about his date of birth.
Yes, exactly. I think Sean Ross Sapp from Fightful went out to his management team to confirm his age. And in fact, the match I mentioned to you, him versus the Million Dollar Man for the Million Dollar title, Virgil was 40 years old.
Just what a phenomenal worker. Holy shit. Rest in peace. Like, unreal. Hilarious. What a dude. And it really sucks. Like, it feels like we just lost like three more, you know? And it always hurts when you lose, like, some wrestling legends like this.
Okay, so there's also a GoFundMe going right now to cover the expenses of Virgil's funeral expenses and help his family out. I will have that link in the show notes, so you guys have a chance to go donate if you want to. Again, we want to express our condolences to the family of Jones, a.k.a. Virgil, and we want to express our sincere condolences, because that one hit me kind of close, because that was one of my favorite memories growing up, him and the Million Dollar Man.
That is one of the best crowd reactions, too, when he finally has just had it.
But it's such a great long story, because it took years of Million Dollar Man doing these evil things for Virgil to finally say, heck with it, and he had Roddy Piper there helping him to be his mouthpiece to get him to be a babyface. And there's a lot of things that could have been done in that era of WWF, but we could talk about at a later date. So I'm going to move on to our next story here. As you gave this to me earlier in the week, Stardom confirms that AMZ and Mina Serenati will be continuing with the company. Ashley, what can you tell us about that?
I feel like it's a pretty good start for this kind of unsure future for Stardom, to at least have a couple of talents that have agreed to stay on. It seems all indicated to have seen that Julia is going to be joining Ross Yagawa in his new promotion. So hanging on to the talents that Stardom can is going to be key for them. They are at a risk of losing quite a bit if they can't get more people to agree to stay. So I feel like at least having a couple of people already agree to stay on is a good sign.
Yes, and I do believe the story's going around that Julia is moving away from Stardom at the end of this month. So it's going to be a month for Stardom as we see who stays and who goes. And we're moving on to my next news story, as you gave me this one too, as Del Vecchino announced that he is going to have surgery on a ruptured ligament and torn meniscus. He's going to be out for a while. We want to wish him a speedy recovery, because this, what I've seen for this guy in AEW is he's one talented athlete. And it kind of sucks that we ain't going to have him for a while.
Yeah, this is a big blow, especially for AAA. I hope he can come back. Like you said, just hope for a speedy recovery. That's a scary, well, you know, it's just a very serious injury. So just all the best.
And my next news story is something that just happened right before we came onto the air, as Mike Santana has left from AEW, and AEW has to remove him from the roster pays according to Fightful. So, Ashley, this is sad, because I was hoping we could at least had him and Santana and Ortiz have single runs in AEW, but apparently we're not going to have Mike Santana anymore in AEW. He hasn't been seen on TV in months.
Yeah, I think since the Ortiz match, or like right around that time. This to me is a big missed opportunity for AEW in the tag team division. I'm not going to say it was the only factor in between them. They are two grown men who have been around each other for a very long time. I'm certain it's not the only issue that came between them. But if one of the bigger issues was like their roster spot, they did deserve more, and Mike Santana was absolutely kind of in the right about that. I feel like it might be a tough time to kind of break out as a singles wrestler. There's a lot of talent out there, and it's going to be a tough uphill climb. It's not impossible, though. He's very talented, and I'm excited for him. I feel like he wanted this a while ago. So I feel like he's, at least for him, moving in the direction that he wants to right now. He just had a match with Josh Alexander. It does suck, though, because I feel like it sort of leaves Ortiz in a weird limbo, because he hasn't really been featured either since kind of like their split and everything.
Very true. We want to wish Mike Santana on the best in his future endeavors. We'll see where he pops up next. And last news story of the week. This is one you gave me a few days ago. Prestige Wrestling had this match between Ali and Mike Spiegelbelly. They thought it was such a great match. They went, oh, F it. We're just going to put it up on our account. So you can go watch this match for free, and you need to, because this match was freaking awesome.
Yeah, there was a lot of little wrestling tidbits going around this weekend, and Prestige is very cool for this. They do this every once in a while. They'll kind of like maybe take like a really popular match or something from one of their more recent cards, and they'll just put it up on their YouTube page for free. So if you are not subscribed to their channel, go subscribe to their channel, because they just throw up free matches all the time for you to watch.
And this is a legit banger, and it may appear in my list here in just about 45 seconds.
It's Sean and Ashley's top five matches of the week. As they count down their five favorite matches from the past week, did your favorite match make the cut?
Because it's that time of the week. We are going to our top five matches of the week. Now, Ashley told me she's probably going to lean heavy to AEW Revolution. So I catered my list to the top five matches outside of AEW Revolution. So Ashley, do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first this time. And I did. I definitely catered to Revolution. I try every week to not put all my matches from one show on my top five, but this pay-per-view was so good. I can't help it. So I started off my list with FTR and Blackpool Combat Club. And we talked about it a little bit, so I won't go too much into detail. But I did love Blackpool Combat Club coming out with the Road Warriors, like, spiked pads and everything, and kind of having, like, this kind of, like, cool, like, tag team look for them. And like you said, seemingly more of a tag team unit than we've sort of seen from them as being, like, more two singles competitors put together. Kind of a slow start, but, man, around that 10-minute mark, it opened up fantastic. Claudio's a freak of nature with his strength, and that uppercut spot is seriously, it was so good.
Okay, so if you have this on Fight TV, go back and double watch this match. And like Ashley said, all you see is Cash Wheeler flying through the air until he meets the mountain that is Claudio Castagnoli in a European uppercut. And it's just like, bam, falls straight to the ground. I was like, oh, this is so freaking great. So my number five match of the week came from last week's episode of Monday Night Raw. It's Shinsuke Nakamura versus Sami Zayn, and it has a few good spots here. We see Nakamura kick out of a Blue Thunder Bomb. We see Sami Zayn get beaten down, thrown outside. Nakamura's going to go for the count-out victory. Sami gets in at 9, and he eats at Kinshasa. As soon as he gets into the ropes, bam! 1, 2, foot on the ropes, saves him there. It takes 2 Huluba kicks to get Sami this victory, and maybe they're teasing a feud with him and Guffer for the IC title at WrestleMania.
I hope they pull the trigger on that, and I hope they pull the trigger on Sami Zayn winning the IC title. He's put in so much work over the past few years. He helped out with the Bloodline storyline immensely. He just continues to be super over with the fans. Every time he's out there, he has a great match. I would love to see him kind of have like a big WrestleMania moment and dethrone the longest reigning IC champion now, right? longest.
He is the longest IC champion of all time, as he's over 550 days now.
Yeah, he's already set the standard, you know? Like I think having like a big WrestleMania moment and a big moment where Sammy regains the IC title, what a great moment.
Exactly. And Sammy's a perfect person that you can take this title off of. He doesn't hurt Gunther one bit, and you have Gunther ready for the move out to the world title level. So, Ashley, what is your number four match of the week?
Number four. Okay, see, this is like crazy. So the number four is the world title match. So Samoa Joe, Hangman Adam Page, and Swerve. I feel like in terms of in-ring, maybe not the best AEW triple threat match. Still fantastic in-ring, though. But the story between Hangman and Swerve and this continued like slow burn double turn with them is just fantastic. You kind of start off with them not being able to focus on Joe or trying to just take Joe out of the match and then focus on each other. Hangman continues to dive in deep with these heel tactics, hitting referees, hitting Swerve with the belt when they're down. He beat the crap out of Bryce Remsburg for not counting three at one point. this turn and at the same time, you have Swerve, like you said, like not wanting to use the Prince Nana's crown to try to get the upper hand. He's trying to just win it now. The ending too, Samoa Joe getting the coquina clutch on Hangman and Hangman tapping out at a time where it didn't really seem like he was in dire straits just yet, and then sort of smirking to himself before the camera cuts away. I'm hoping that if Hangman is going to be gone, we at least sort of get something with this before he goes. Like maybe he comes back, they have something, and then he gets suspended for beating the hell out of Bryce Remsburg, and then he can take his much needed time off. Let him take whatever he needs to, you know, take care of. And then in this meantime, you can fully turn Swerve babyface. You can start having him take on heel challengers. This is going to open the door for Swerve to, we'll still have Hangman later, but Swerve can be free to kind of get away from him also for a little bit right now.
Very, very well done. I feel like this was a very excellent story-based match. Is a little different than what AEW is known for the world title scene, but I was surprised you had it at number four. If I was doing a normal Sean list for top five matches of the week, I would probably have this at like my number two or number one match of the week, but it's one you need to go check out. So let's go to my number four match of the week. And I'm going back to NXT from this last week. It's Charlie Dempsey. If you don't know who that is, it's William Regal's son. Versus Noam Dar for the Heritage Cup, and Noam Dar drops the cup to Charlie Dempsey. And this is the fact that we have William Regal's son in WWE. With William Regal in WWE, we need to see them reunited and them interacting. But Charlie Dempsey with a title, any kind of title, even the Heritage Cup, perfect.
Yeah. That would be very cool to like see that dynamic of like William Regal coming out with his son. That would be very cool.
So, Ashley, what is your number three match of the week?
Number three? All right. The Continental Classic Championship. I went with the Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson. And this is the world that I live in this week where Bryan Danielson has to be number three on my list because this pay-per-view was that good. I was gushing about it earlier. It's one of my favorite feuds in AEW and one of my favorite matches. These two beat the hell out of each other, and Bryan Danielson... Still just every single time, much like Will Ospreay, just kind of throwing his name in there to have like match of the night, match of the year, to be the wrestler of the year. Fantastic. And Eddie getting the big win and finally the respect from Bryan Danielson. I love the ending.
I do too. And like I said earlier in the show, I feel like we should see them go into this tag team title tournament where they're the unlikely tag team they get put together, and can they coexist? And hopefully they can coexist. It'd be kind of fun.
Honestly, that might be my favorite can they coexist idea.
I mean, really, it's one time you can use the storyline and it would make perfect sense.
No, I agree. I would definitely be into it if they're considering. I don't know how big this tournament is going to be. I'm I'm a little nervous and I'm a little apprehensive. I'm hoping we get to see, like, I'm definitely hoping like Private Party is going to be a big part in this.
Well, I feel like they should be in there. I feel like Top Flight should be in there. I feel like there's a lot of tag teams you can do. You know what? Next week on this show, we're going to do our own bracket. We're doing a 8-team Real Free Professional Wrestling. If we were in charge of AEW, what would our tag team tournament look like next week on Real Free Professional Wrestling? Okay, so I'm going to my number two match. And you know what? We kind of think alike here because I went back to Dynamite and I got the trios match that started the show. It's Eddie Kingston and FTR versus the Full Force BCC. And the fact that at the end of this match, you have Eddie Kingston going to sleep in the arms of Daniel Bryan made me think that maybe Daniel would win that the pay-per-view. I was wrong, but this was just as good as a tag team match and Eddie Kingston versus Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, no, loved this match too. You got him flexing on him as he's choking him out. And again, just brutal. The stomps to the side of Eddie's head were just looked nuts. I genuinely love the BCC as a faction. I'm hoping that they that this Claudio and Moxley team is in this tournament and goes far.
Honestly, they're my dark horse to be the next AEW Tag Team Champions.
Especially with the way they've been being pushed right now, I could definitely see them being at least a finalist in this tournament.
Yes, and the finals should be FTR versus them again. And Young Bucks, they don't need the titles. I know there's Young Bucks fans going to go like, hey, they should be in this. They should be in a tournament. But they're at a level where they don't need the titles anymore. They're cool enough to be the Young Bucks to hang out on their own, be villains and stuff.
Plus, the Young Bucks also, in years ago when AEW first started, they were also in that they had like the tag tournament at the beginning of AEW. And the Young Bucks lost in the first round, and it never hurt them. Like, they could come in and just get... Top Flight could take them out in the first round. You know, like, they've had this history with Top Flight in these matches now a couple times with them. I could see, like, Top Flight knocking them out kind of like in a surprise way like Private Party did years ago.
Okay. Well, what is your number two match of the week, Ashley?
Number two? All right. So, possibly the best in-ring match during the pay-per-view this week, Will Ospreay and Konosuke Takeshita. I don't even know where to start with this match. It was from the bell, just full speed. every move looked devastating. The speed at which they hit clotheslines, reversals, flips, dives, slams, insane. This match was fantastic, and it's one that I anticipate watching at least once or twice more this week.
Well, I already seen this match twice. I watched it live last night, and this morning when I woke up, I went back to Fight TV, and I went back to watch this match again, and it's just as great. I'm still debating with myself, is this better than Michael Oku versus Will Ospreay? I feel like this is 1A, 1B. Let us know in the comments below of this video, which Will Ospreay match do you like more? Do you like Will Ospreay versus Oku? Or do you like Will Ospreay versus Takeshita? And tweet us at RealFreePW. Let us know. Help me decide my match of the year.
Will Ospreay isn't going to let us off this easy. We're still going to have a few more to choose from, I feel.
I do too. I feel like there's going to be a bunch of them. So my number one match outside of AEW Revolution is from last week's Monday Night Raw. And it's Imperium versus New Day in a street fight. And in New Day showed up in hockey jerseys and blue jeans. And I went, cool. Finally, a tag team understands the concept that when you go into a street fight, you don't need your wrestling gear. Just come dressed as you are or dress to make sure you don't get as much damage as the other team.
Yeah, no, I love when they have like those like special like street fight outfits like that. Absolutely. Like, it makes sense. You're going to be going through tables, you might take a bump off a ladder, you might get hit with something. Makes sense that you run a cover up, so just one of the easiest things. And it's like a cool look, I think, for these fights.
And finally, we got a serious New Day. Not a haha funny New Day. They were a piss off Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston, and they went down there and beat the heck out of the Imperium, so bravo.
A literal New Day, if you will.
I got a feeling I know your number one match of the week, but Ashley, what is your number one match of the week?
I feel like anybody listening might know the match of the week for me. And it is Sting's final match, Sting and Darby Allin taking on the Young Bucks. Just unbelievable. can't gush about it enough. From the intro video, with Sting in the movie theater, watching all his past accomplishments and stuff, to, like you said, his son's coming out dressed up like the former iterations of him, to the match itself. Perfect. I don't know if I've witnessed live like a better send-off for a professional wrestler in my life.
Okay, so in my wildest dreams, I cannot come up with a better farewell to the Icon Sting, and he beat the Stunbucks. The Stunbucks. I have it on the little crawler there at the bottom of the screen. Had to get one last, the evil EVPs, the number one bad guys of this podcast, and I enjoyed every minute of Sting and Darby Allin and Sting's sons being the living tar out of the Stunbucks. So it's a perfectly good number one match of the week. And the little Stinger in me from 1988 is perfectly happy. And, you know, it kind of got me here in the heart. Listen to Sting just give the farewell message. And I wish, like you said, the only criticism I have about this match, give him this a little bit more time before you hit that hard out on the pay-per-view. But bravo to AEW to getting that up on AEW social as soon as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't believe Darby's going to wrestle in 2 weeks. Not even 2 weeks. It's like a week and a half.
I do believe it's like 11 days from the pay-per-view. 11 days from him falling off that ladder through that glass and having his back cut up, being stitched up, stop getting stitched up to go to the media scrum so he can be there with Sting as him and Sting are talking to the wrestling media there in Greensboro, North Carolina. And, you know, I got to say, you know what? That was a great match. I wish both gentlemen all the best. And that has been our top five matches of the week here on Ray Free Professional Wrestling. Before we go, one final news story, because this broke today as well. Paul Heyman, it's your first entry into the 2024 WWE Hall of Fame class. Makes sense since you're going to Philly.
Makes a lot of sense. And maybe a little overdue. I mean, he's still there and a part of it, so maybe that's why they've held off for so long. But kind of an obvious choice, I feel.
True. And you know what? This is made Friday night after SmackDown when they have the Hall of Fame. Must watch. This speech is going to be amazing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, I hope we at least get a story or two during this speech, because you know he's got so many.
Okay, so who would he have induct Paul Heyman into the Hall of Fame?
God. That's a great question.
You know, there's one in the company and he's kind of injured and he's not doing anything for Mania. CM Punk. That would be my choice.
Yeah, no, that could work. Especially, like you said, like if he's not going to be able to kind of sort of be involved in the show in another capacity, like that could be perfect. Like, you know, kind of like the original Paul Heyman guy.
True. And I feel like, I mean, you could go with Bully Ray. You could go with Tommy Dreamer. Anybody with an ECW connection to Paul Heyman, but CM Punk's right there, and I feel like that's the perfect choice.
I think they should kind of go with that. I think that is the perfect choice.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Radio Free Professional Wrestling and watching us here on YouTube on Radio Free Pro Wrestling. And on behalf of me and Ashley, just want to say one last time, thank you, Sting, for an amazing career. Thank you for a career that lasts as long as I've been a wrestling fan, from the time I was 8 years old to now being almost 46 here in May, the same. But Sting, thank you for an amazing career. And Ashley, where can we find you on the information superhighway?
I'm on Twitter and it's at @groovy_ash_.
And ladies and gentlemen, you can always watch this show every Sunday night. We normally record around 10 p.m. Eastern, and you could go over to RadioFreePW.com to catch up on the latest episode of Professional Wrestling. You can follow the show on Twitter at RadioFreePW. And until next time, stay stunning. And maybe for one of the few last times I could do this, scissor guns up.
True. Scissor guns up.
Christina here. On behalf of the guys, thanks for listening. Like the show? Do us a favor and share it with a friend. Have a stunning question? Email it to the show at radiofreeprowrestling@gmail.com. Until next time, this has been Radio Free Pro Wrestling. Stay stunningly.